Meeting will come to order. We have a quorum, so we can start here. And the first thing on the agenda is the omnibus crime bill. It's been out for 24 hours. Everybody was notified by it. And we have the cheat sheet, which explains it. I think everybody's gone through it. We don't need to go over it line by line. Is there anyone in the audience that has a passionate, absolute need to speak on it? It's pretty simple. I think the committee would not be too happy, probably, if there's a lot of testimony. Okay, then we'll go ahead with it. And rather than go through it line by line, there, I believe there's a few amendments, and I'll make an amendment right off the bat. On line 5116, I've agreed with Representative Holberg to cross off the last word in that sentence, or in the that line, in, and put in driven by. And then on 51.17, cross off the word which and the words is found. Oh, you have an amendment to do that? Okay. Can't we? Why don't we just do it orally? Unless you've got it ready handed out. I mean, it's quicker to do it orally. Why don't we just continue? Okay. Dennis, it's just changing this to so that any motor vehicle driven by the inmate. Okay.
I'll let you do the talking.
Then hand it out, and Representative Coles just explained I was going to do it orally. Dennis had an amendment, did exactly the same thing. As this is the agreement we have with Representative Holberg. I've already read what it does. Do you want to wait till it's handed out, or it's your amendment?
Mr. Chair, just for staff, the only question I guess I have is on line 1.3 we say driven by the inmate, and on line 1.5 we say driven by the offender. Is that correct? Is that how it's supposed to be?
Okay. Yes.
Captain, yes. Then, Mr. Chair, I certainly support the amendment. Appreciate you bringing it.
Okay. The chair makes a motion to adopt the A12 amendment. Any discussion? Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Carries. Representative Tamar, you have an amendment A14, which I believe the Republicans have had copies of this, and Representative Coles, is this one okay? Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Tamar, would you move your A14 amendment, and then
I move the A14.
Very briefly explain it.
I move the A14 amendment. As I stated before, this is a requirement by the federal government in the reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act that says that the law enforcement and prosecutors may not ask a complainant of sexual conduct to submit to a polygraph. And Phil Gillespie's here. You're okay with, I believe everything's okay with this amendment. Nodding his head.
Mr. Gillespie is nodding his head yes for the record. The record doesn't pick up the shaking in the head.
I would move the amendment.
Okay, Representative Paymar moves the A14 amendment. Is there any discussion from either side? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Carries. Representative Hillstrom, you're not going to offer that one?
Mr. Chair, I'm only going to offer the CRIMNET one, the two sections that we heard last night.
Okay.
I think that's the A4 amendment.
Representative Hillstrom offers the A4 amendment. Representative Coles, is that... Okay. Any discussion of that amendment? Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Carries. Are there any other amendments?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Westrom.
I've got an amendment that I thought it was in the packets, but maybe... Is it not out, Dennis?
No, that's not it. What? Just a second. Representative Westrom, do you have some kind of...
Well, Mr. Chair, I turned it into the committee, I thought, yesterday.
I think Ms. Grace has it.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Representative Westrom. Okay, Representative Westrom, you want to offer the A3 amendment?
Right.
Is that the...
That's the law, right? Mr. Chair, it's being handed out here.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, the A3 amendment would deal with juvenile crime issues that seemingly are getting more serious, but as many of you have heard, Emily Johnson, a 2-year-old child in daycare, a family licensed daycare in Fergus Falls, Representative Mornis's district, just bordering my district, was murdered last summer by a boy who was 3 weeks, 19 days in fact, short of turning 14. And because of our juvenile laws that only allow a county attorney to even try to certify a juvenile as an adult at age 14 or above, the prosecution could not even attempt to affect or certify this person who committed this crime as an adult. And it really begs the question of whether juveniles that do serious crimes, murder in this case, and if you heard the facts, I won't go into them today. The family is very interested in seeing if they can help affect laws so other families don't have to go through the trial that they've gone through, and then to see a person, in their estimation, get a very light sentence for taking their daughter, one and only daughter, out of their lives because of assaulting her and leaving her for dead. And more beyond that, not even telling anybody to bring in aid or help. And the family was stuck in a situation not knowing what the problem was with their daughter. The daycare provider, upon returning home, didn't know what the problem was, and the doctors didn't know what the problem was, and the problem was her head had been beat severely, initially thinking she was suffering from an allergic reaction. The medical professionals were not even able to treat her properly, and so a little over a day later, Emily Johnson died in the Fargo hospital. And so this goes on, I know, in the metro area, much more than it does in rural Minnesota, but wherever it goes on, we need to examine the laws of juvenile justice. And this bill would lower the age of certification to 13. So it's only 1 year. It's an incremental step to allowing prosecution to certify someone as an adult. It doesn't bring an absolute certification. It says they can try to certify a 13-year-old or older as an adult. Other states go as low as 10. Some states, there's a couple states out there that don't even have an age on serious crimes. Wisconsin, our neighbor to the east, requires certification as an adult in murder cases. other states in the serious crimes allow a certification process, and that's what we're asking for here. And Mr. Chair, the other aspect of this bill would extend the age of an expungement. If the juvenile at age 19 currently wants to try to expunge his record, he or she could. He, in this instance, this would raise that age in a serious crime, such as murder, up to the age of 28. So at age 19 or age 20, a person in this situation wouldn't potentially be running a daycare or driving a school bus or doing other jobs. At least they may do those jobs, but at least people would have some notice and an option to know that, that this person did commit a horrendous crime. And the facts are coming out monthly, more and more disturbing, that this was not the first time a child in this daycare center was assaulted potentially by this youth. And so the argument that this person at age 13 years, 11 months, and 1 week didn't know what he was doing certainly is hard to argue and hard to believe as you hear the facts and as you see more and more serious juvenile crimes occurring. And so I would ask for your support on this issue. It's a major issue that I think we need to be addressing in this state. And Emily's Law is what this law is being pushed as, and Lynn and Travis Johnson, the parents of Emily, are very supportive. They could not make it down here today, but do plan to continue. They were down here last week, and will continue to be visiting you and your offices over the next several weeks. And so, Mr. Chair, I'd ask for the committee's support.
Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Briefly, I support Representative Westrom's amendment. I agree with it in many respects, especially when he talks about Emily Johnson. When you talk about the fact that 19 days separated this individual who apparently had certain propensities that were recognized or should have been recognized prior to this event, it's tragic that after this family buries their daughter, they go home to an empty house. He goes home to live with his parents, and in a short 5 years, there will be no record whatsoever on his record that this happened. Mr. Chair, I support the amendment. The only change that I would ask at some point that we consider, because I know you do care about this stuff, is perhaps this is as these kids become more and more sophisticated. By picking this arbitrary number of 14 years of age or 13 years of age, perhaps we should recognize that we have healthcare professionals out there, and we have a court system that is very capable of determining on a case-by-case basis what we need to do with some of these individuals with violent propensities. So I support this today, but in the future, if we revisit it, I'd like to see us give the court a little bit more leeway under these circumstances.
Representative Dillon.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Briefly, I just want to add my voice to the record that I think this is an extremely important issue, and I hope that you and the committee, we can find a way to address this issue this session and move forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Westrom, we did have an agreement with the leadership of both sides not to bring up bills that were in that we hadn't heard, and this I've committed to the actual parents to look into that in the interim. When Senator Mua and I first met after we were appointed as chairs of the committees in the House and Senate, our first thing that we agreed on was that during this interim we're going to study the issue of youth crime and what to do about it. There's a lot of issues involved with this, and I've been looking into it. It's very serious in my district. We have 12 and 13-year-olds shooting people. And so it's needless to say I'm very interested in this issue. And I've already looked into the fact that if you're, for instance, a 17-year-old and have 2 days to go to 18, and you are caught with a gun after you've already had a violent felony, if you were 3 days older, you would have a minimum of 5 years in prison, and because you're 2 or 3 days younger, you only can, I think it's the average is you may get about 6 weeks maximum, maybe 6 days. So there's a whole issue there. Some states don't have the cutoff at 10. You can be, in Minnesota, it's impossible to be charged under 10, even with delinquency. These are all issues, and what to do to rehabilitate youth, those are all going to be taken up this summer, and I, Representative Westrom, I would request that you withdraw this. It's going to throw open the this bill. It's going to create a lot of problems, and I talked to the parents of Emily and told them that we were going to do this summer, have hearings on these issues, and they seemed okay with it when I said that to them.
Mr. Chair, and I appreciate your commitment to look at it this summer. I would like to see us move on some of these issues sooner, but and I know the family is extremely interested in being able to participate in those hearings and share their story, so it doesn't hopefully have the same results for a, heaven forbid, another family in a similar situation. And Mr. Chair, while I'm disappointed we haven't been able to deal with some of that this year, I do appreciate your commitment to take it up this summer. I want to work closely with you on that, Representative Nornes, as well as other members of our side of the aisle. And for today, I'll withdraw this amendment with your commitment of dealing with this. But I'm hopeful maybe we can still find a way to do at least something this year to move in that direction. But I'll withdraw the amendment at this time, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Representative Westrom. And I sincerely do commit. This is an issue that, like I said, Senator Moo and I agreed was our number one issue to work on over the interim. So we will be doing that for sure.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There's a couple. I believe that Representative Coles, you have Representative Simon's AO2 amendment. Is that
who's Representative Simon?
Representative Simon's AO2, I believe.
Yeah, if Representative Simon is here, if somebody could explain it, just
okay.
What it
Representative Pelstrom, can you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Coles and committee. This is Representative Simon's bill regarding victims of domestic violence canceling their lease, and we did, in fact, pass the bill on to the general register. And so Representative Simon is protecting something in his transportation bill right now. And so he asked if I would offer this. It shouldn't be controversial. It passed out of this committee. So.
Okay. No objection. Okay.
I don't have any problems.
Thank
you. I can't speak for the rest of the
committee. Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, no. Carries. I have been informed by our CA that there's two other parts that we have to take out. Lines 51.20 to 52.13 is the Johnson bill that we passed the floor, and it's the governor is going to sign it, apparently, I think today or next couple days. So I don't think there's any disagreement with that one. Any discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Carries. There's one other one, the Hawes bill, the study on short-term offenders. Apparently the agency has agreed and is doing that. And I've been told by staff that Representative Hawes agrees to that. That's line 49.9. through 50.8, and I would, since the author agrees, the agency's in agreement, I would Representative Paymar?
Well, I'm just wondering why we're taking it out of the bill. I mean, so they agreed. I mean, this is a serious problem for counties, and how do we ensure accountability? How do we ensure that we're going to get a written report back in 2009? I mean, why would we take it out? It's providing direction and to the Department of Corrections. I mean, every county in this state has felt the impact of having to pay for short-term offenders. And I mean, is Representative Haas requesting that it could be pulled out? If he is, then I ask.
Jenna?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Cole.
Mr. Chair, Representative Paymar, I understand that Representative Haas, number one, is fine with this coming out. The governor's office, I understand, has asked that it come out. Everybody's in agreement that it is happening, and so I think it's seen as unnecessary. And it is my understanding that Representative Haas is comfortable with this language coming out.
Is there further discussion?
That's what he wants.
Representative Paymar, I just thought if both sides had agreed, maybe. but if that's objectionable, is there opposition to the amendment? Okay. All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, say no.
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 Carries. Are there any other amendments? Okay. Then is there any discussion or ready to vote?
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Representative
Mr. Polk. Chair, I would just, number one, thank you for putting the bill together. I think we've got a good bill here. I appreciate your efforts and the committee's efforts putting the bill together. Thank you for, I think there's some good things in this bill. I mean, we're not doing things this year necessarily like we've done in the past. I mean, last session we were able to do life in prison without parole for violent sex offenders. But what we have here is a good, solid bill that takes care of some things around the edges that need to be addressed, and I appreciate your efforts and urge members' support on the bill.
Any other comments? Okay. The motion is to pass it as amended and re-refer it to finance so that it can go to Representative Paymar's committee for inclusion in the omnibus crime bill. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Carries. The omnibus property bill, Representative Olin. Do you want to present that?
And you can present it.
Okay.
But I would like to make one comment to Representative Mueller, with your permission.
Sure.
If you should choose to do Representative Westrom's request by a subcommittee of some sort, I would request to be on that subcommittee because I agree with the principle of what Representative Westrom is trying to do.
Representative Olin, I'm sure that there will be work. That is a big issue we're taking on, the whole issue of youth crime, what causes, what to do about it, and how to treat them. I'm sure there will be plenty of welcoming any effort from anybody on the committee that wants to work on that. Okay, I will move the House File 1225 to delete all amendment DE1. And is there anybody with a passion to speak on this from the audience? I think everything's been heard. Okay, then we'll just, I think it's been out. Does anybody want me to actually go through it? Or there's, I think, 8 or 9 bills. We've already heard them. We've already actually, I believe, passed all these on their own to the floor, so there's not a lot of point in discussion. Is it okay? Anybody want to speak to it? Okay, then the motion for this is to...
Very briefly. I don't think we haven't adopted the DE1 yet, have we?
Oh, I'm sorry.
We can adopt the DE1, and then I do have a...
Representative Cole's, yes. There is? Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, we have to adopt the DE1. All in favor of the DE1, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed... No? What? No. No. All opposed, no. It's adopted. You're confused. Representative Coles, go ahead. You had some issues on that. There's also one amendment to it, which puts it in the shape that the amendments would do what Representative Dabney did last night to the bill before we passed it, which is the agreement between each side on predatory lending that they all agreed to.
Mr. Chair, I guess I would, I can hold my questions if we want to adopt the A1 amendment,
okay.
And then I can talk to the bill.
Then members, we would adopt the motion to adopt the A1 amendment to the DE1 amendment. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, no. Carries. Representative Coles, you had some questions.
Mr. Chair, I just want to make sure members understand what is in this bill. As I looked through it, it is some of the non-controversial real property bar type issues that came through. But it also does include in Article 2, which starts on page 19, the predatory lending bills that we heard from various authors, and I believe the amendment, the A1 amendment we just put on, as you indicated, Mr. Chair, is the Dabney amendment. I tend to agree with the direction of those. I don't know that they are in final shape. I'm willing to support the bill today, knowing that there's still time between now and when it's heard on the floor. But I do think members need to know that those predatory lending issues are in the bill, and there are still some questions. I raised an amendment last night on one issue and committed to Representative Dabney that I'd keep working with them on it, indicating that any, I believe that was on the access. Maybe that wasn't on this one. Something about the cause of action under point 8.31 is in the public interest. In fact, that does exist on page 29 here. We're indicating that anytime somebody brings one of these private actions, it is in the public interest. We're declaring that as a legislature. I'm not sure that we ought to be doing that. I've talked with Representative Dabney about that. I'll continue to have those discussions. So members just need to know that the bill is not, I wouldn't characterize the bill as non-controversial. There are still some issues in some of those predatory lending issues that need to be worked on and resolved. There is not peace in the valley, as I understand was the case last night in Commerce as they moved through all kinds of bills because there was lots of peace in the valley. But I think we should move this out of here today and continue to work on it as it moves to the floor. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Polk. Is there any other discussion of the...
Mr. Chair.
Oh, Representative West.
Just to that point, when we declare it public interest, what does that mean? Does that mean the Attorney General is obligated to defend every case or prosecute every case? Or what is the significance of
that? Representative Westrom, what that means is if you have somebody that's basically ripped off by what the actual... You didn't hear the comments. Representative De La Forest was probably at the hearings in Commerce. The mortgage brokers called some of their members scoundrels, and that was a word I remember because it's kind of from Shakespeare or something. But there's some really bad actors in there, and if one of your constituents is ripped off by them, this would give them the right to sue under that statute. So that's what that does.
So, Mr. Chair, it would be a private action, but giving the person that's been swindled or ripped off an action to sue the
right
mortgage broker.
I'm sorry, Representative Westrom, yes.
Right, thank you.
Any other discussion? Okay. All in favor of the bill 1225 as amended, and this is for passage to the general register, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no. Carries. The next bill is, do you have that? Oh, another Olin bill. Representative Olin, this one you're going to have to present yourself. Representative Olin moves the 1053 House file. And does this one go to finance or to the floor?
I imagine since it does provide for a felony provision, it would go to the finance because there's possible implications. I don't think there is going to be a bad implication, but I'm not sure.
Representative Paymer, which do you think?
I don't see the amendment. Mr. Chair, we can have Mr. Carter look at it. We're done. We're not hearing any more bills. So.
Then why don't we send it to the floor, and if it's needed, it can be called back to finance somehow or whatever.
I just did get handed by Mr. Voigt a copy of a fiscal note showing there is dollar implication, so I don't know if that affects it.
I guess we'll... Representative Paymer, how do you want this to go? Do you want it to go to finance or to the floor? Or I guess the question is first for you and then Representative Olin.
Mr. Chair, what is the Fed impact, Representative Olin?
I just got this, so I'm trying to fumble through it. But the dollar implication, Representative Paymer, appears to be 74,000 fiscal year 08 and 208 fiscal 09. And there are tails that get higher, for what it's worth. But I'm trying to find a bed implication number right off here. It says none for 07, 8 for 08, 13 for 09, and it looks like it stays at 13. That's for...
Mr. Chair, why don't we refer it to the Finance Committee and have Mr. We're going to have to do something with it.
They can see what... Okay.
I wasn't expecting it to be that hot.
After 5 minutes, we figured out what the motion is to start. The motion is to pass and refer to the Finance Committee. Representative Olin, would you present your bill?
I have a handout sheet on it. Essentially, what the bill does is make it a felony to steal a computer that has any kind of identification information included in it, in its memory. Today I have with me Deputy Assistant Attorney General David Voigt, and it is an Attorney General bill, so I'll let him present it in more detail.
Oh, Representative... No. Oh, okay. Go ahead, Representative Olin. Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. My name is David Voigt. I'm a Deputy Attorney General. This bill is about giving an additional tool to prosecutors in the fight against identity theft. In today's information age, identity theft is a growing problem. And all too often we hear stories about computers being stolen, laptops, computers being stolen from cars or from offices. And if there is personal information about individuals on those computers, that can be a gold mine for identity thieves. The way the theft statutes currently exist, the level of the offense is tied to the value of the property. And for the theft of a computer with identity information, that doesn't really reflect the potential value of what is stolen. Computers particularly can lose their resale value rather quickly after they're stolen. And a laptop computer, a used laptop computer, maybe a couple of years old, may not reach that $500 threshold in order for the theft of that computer to be considered a felony. And what this bill does is it places computers in that category of property where it's a felony if it's stolen regardless of its value. Given the growing problem of identity theft today, Attorney General Lori Swanson supports this bill and urges passage of this legislation. And I am available to answer any questions if I can.
Representative Allman, did you have any further testimony?
No, this is my testimony. I understand, I believe there might be an amendment to this that's been passed out.
First, we'd have ask if there's any one from the audience that wanted to speak on it. Okay, there isn't. I have an amendment that's offered. It looks like an A1 amendment.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I would offer the A1 amendment.
Okay, Representative De La Forest offers the A1 amendment discussion.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chairman, briefly, I don't have a quarrel with the bill per se, but I believe there's a serious weakness with it, and right now there is no intent element. And what this bill is doing, it's enhancing a penalty to a felony with all the deprivation that comes with it and the lifetime of problems that come with a felony conviction. So it is my belief that if a person is going to be convicted under this bill, there ought to be some sort of intent to convert the data, to use the data. I mean, I'm worried about a hypothetical situation where a person steals a computer, and they ought to be held to account for that, obviously, but unbeknownst to them, there's identifying data on the computer. Suddenly, they're facing a felony charge when they had utterly no knowledge of identifying data. Again, I agree with the underlying public policy of this bill, but I'm very troubled with the current form of the bill lacking any kind of intent requirement, and so that is my amendment, and I'd stand for any questions.
Discussion? Representative Lash?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative De La Forest, when I first heard the bill, I was thinking of the Shawshank Redemption, when the other individual was in prison because he knocked over a liquor store that just happened to be connected to a federal post office. And so he's sitting in on federal time accidentally, which, of course, that's the tragedy of the movie as they try to portray it. And I kind of agree, and Representative Mullen, I didn't get a chance to talk to you about this ahead of time. And most of all, it comes down to a particular prosecutor and whether or not they choose to charge something. But it causes a concern for me as well, and that's why I agree with Representative Boyd's amendment.
I'll let, with the chair's permission, I'll let Mr. Boyd respond.
Mr. Boyd?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representatives, I can understand the concern about punishing somebody too harshly for conduct that they may not be fully aware of. The problem with the specific intent requirement, however, is it virtually eliminates the usefulness of this bill as a tool for prosecutors to fight identity theft. I'm not aware of any other provisions in the theft statute that require proof of some kind of intent for what to do with the property after it's stolen. And that's what this does. Mm-hmm. The specific intent here, especially in the theft context, is almost impossible to prove without a confession by the suspect. Now, theft operations, as you know, can be sophisticated. They can operate with people on the front line stealing things with no knowledge of what ultimately is going to happen to that. And identity theft is a sophisticated crime by itself. If you envision the situation in which a laptop is stolen by somebody who may not know exactly what's on that laptop and then simply pawned or sold to someone else, if there is identifying information on that laptop that falls into the wrong hands, the harm to the victims can be devastating, and there could be dozens, perhaps hundreds of victims, and that harm is the same whether the person who stole it in the first place knew about that identity information or not. The point of this bill is to place computers in that category, like automobiles, that we want to, as a policy matter, say these things should not be stolen. And if they are, the punishment will be harsh. The other comment that I would make about the amendment is that the amendment itself, in addition to inserting that specific intent element, has its own definition of what the theft of the computer is, which is more limited than the definition of theft in the original bill. The original bill would allow a conviction for theft of a computer under any of the theories in the theft statute. And the amendment limits it to intentionally and without claim of right taking, transferring, concealing, etc., any computer. It may not reach scenarios like employee theft. It may not reach scenarios like theft by swindle. It may not meet temporary control scenarios. When this bill was first drafted, there was debate. Does this belong in the theft of computer statute or the general theft statute? And the reason it went in the general theft statute is because the general theft statute provides a much broader range of theft conduct that can be reached, and this amendment essentially takes that away. With this amendment, I would think that it would be more appropriately placed in the computer theft statute, because this language looks very similar, if not identical, to the language in the computer theft statute.
Next is Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Voigt. And I understand that, and I think I understand the importance of identity theft, too, and how the value that these rings have is in the information itself. I also think that nearly all computers these days are going to have that kind of identifying information that's going to make them qualify. But I think the question before this committee is, specific intent is determined probably somehow, in this case, either way, under the current status of the law or under Representative LaForest's amendment. Because I, as a prosecutor, I have an obligation to do justice first and foremost, as do all prosecutors. And if I find out it's just some buffoon who nabbed a really old, dumpy computer that maybe should qualify as a gross misdemeanor or something like that, and we're going to automatically make it a felony, I, as a prosecutor, I'm going to say, okay, well, justifiably, I could probably reduce this charge because it doesn't, it's not as severe as the felony. You know, he's not part of an identity theft ring. But you're asking the committee to essentially give all prosecutors that determination authority of specific intent ahead of time. Representative De La Forest amendment just wants it in the statute itself so that it has to be proven before a finder of fact. So I guess my question for you is, can you assure us that no prosecutors are going to unjustifiably hang this over the head as a felony charge of some buffoon who accidentally fell into this category of crime?
Mr. Boyd?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lesh, the point of this legislation is to make it a felony for everyone to steal a computer, regardless of what they specifically intend to do with it, because of the potential danger of identity theft. I compare it to the theft of an automobile. We place cars in a category where, regardless of the value, if somebody steals a car, it's going to be a felony. And that doesn't make a difference if they are some buffoon who needs a ride two blocks away, or if they're somebody who's part of a sophisticated auto theft ring. The theft of a car, because it's such a problem in society, is a felony, And that's what the Attorney General is trying to accomplish with this bill, is the recognition that identity theft is becoming such a growing problem that computers ought to be in that category where they're punished as a felony regardless. Now, judges and prosecutors, as you pointed out, always have the authority to reduce charges or agree to sentences below the felony level if there are indeed mitigating circumstances, and this would be no different. But what we're trying to accomplish with this bill is to place computers in that off-limits category where if you steal them, you could be convicted of a felony.
Representative Bigham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm sorry, I forgot your last name.
Voight.
Mr. Voight. I think you just hit on what I was going to say, so mine will be brief, is that most computers are over $500, so they'd be getting charged at least with a felony anyway, more than likely, and unless there's mitigating circumstances where it would get lowering, you're just trying to recognize that no matter what, it's going to be charged as a felony. Does this include the Palm Pilot type things that maybe aren't quite at the felony threshold? If you would be holding on to, because you could theoretically have personal information in there on your own, of your own, just for record keeping purposes. So this would include those as well?
This would include any devices that meet the definition of a computer in the computer theft statute. It refers back to the computer theft statute for that definition.
Then Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chairman, just an idea. I was wondering if we could just lay it over temporarily and let council get together and put some kind of an intention thing in there, because I don't want to down the bill, but just spreading the net too big here and just grabbing a worthless computer that probably you couldn't resell to anybody. It could be worth almost nothing but still be a felony just because there's data on it. I was wondering if we could just somehow modify the bill so we could still pass it, but put some protection for Joe Schmuckatello from Beaver Falls that doesn't know what he's, you know, stealing.
Representative Cornish, we're not going to have another meeting, so
Mr. Chair.
It's not that
I would.
Mr. Chair, this does have to go to Representative Tamar's committee, and Representative Tamar's committee bill is already done, and so unless there's consensus, it's not going to make it in the omnibus bill, and it does have fiscal implications.
Yeah.
So maybe the sides can get together and work on it before it has to be heard in Representative Tamar's committee.
Representative Tamar, or let's hear from Representative Tamar.
Well, Mr. Chair, we could still hear it, but I would prefer that it get referred to my committee. I would prefer that the bill be referred to my committee.
Okay. Representative Olin.
I was going to say I believe that the vote on this amendment is the appropriate thing to do at this time, because I'm not sure we can resolve the wording.
Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, with that spirit, I think I maybe have a couple of concerns with this language amendment potentially, but I'd rather have the amendment on than off. And so I guess I would urge members to support the amendment. We refer it to Representative Paymar's committee, Representative De La Forest, the author, and Representative Lesh and others could, with the AG's office, can get together and discuss this, and maybe there's a way to work it out. But I'd feel more comfortable if the amendment was on, and then we could work from there.
Representative Hill.
Mr. Chairman, maybe to wrap this up, I admit perhaps my amendment language isn't ideal, and it can be made better, but I would hope we've got some consensus that we would put it on and work to retain some type of intent element. You know, Mr. Chairman, real briefly, I'm glad my colleagues agree with me in the sense that, you know, a felony conviction is a serious matter. I mean, Representative Paymar, you know, every time we're putting people in prison in Minnesota, it costs a lot of money, and we've got limited resources. You know, getting tough on crime is something that's easy to say, but then you got to pay for it. More than that, everybody in this committee knows a felony conviction will stay with you the rest of your life. You want to buy a firearm to go hunting, you apply for credit, you apply for a job, and this, I know both committees have been working hard on reintegration issues and recognizing the concept that criminals can redeem themselves. So I hope we could put the amendment on, and I'd be happy to work on things as well moving forward if there's a way we can make my amendment better.
Representative De La Forest, I just have a question. that got raised in my mind from your amendment. I knew a guy that, not a friend by any means, but I knew of him that he was in a restaurant. He saw a businessman leave his briefcase, and so the guy stole it. It turned out it was a diamond salesperson, and the briefcase was, I have something like a $400,000, $500,000 worth. He could say that all I intended to take was paper, but then he wouldn't. Now, I don't know what would happen because he then tried to sell them, so obviously he was intending to make use of his theft to the utmost. Under yours, he wouldn't be able to be charged with more than just a briefcase theft, it would seem. I don't know. Mr. Boyd, you may know about that, but I'm just trying to think of an analogy that I'd seen really happen.
Again, Mr. Chairman, Representative Bigham, I thought, made good points about dollar values still being out there as well. And as I said, Mr. Chairman, I admit that perhaps my language can certainly be made better, and I'm very willing to work with interested parties to try and get the best possible language.
Mr. Boyd.
Mr. Chair, you raise a good point that there is not a specific knowledge element towards the value of the property. When someone steals property, they are responsible for whatever the value is, and my guess is 99 out of 100 thieves would be delighted when they found out that briefcase was filled with diamonds.
Okay, if there's no other discussion. All in favor of the De La Forest Amendment, say aye.
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 All opposed, say no.
No.
It carries. Is there any other amendments to the bill? No? Okay, is there any further discussion to the bill?
I would urge everyone to vote for the bill as it in its present form, and let's go on.
Representative Olin moves the passage of the bill and re-referral to the Finance Committee. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Carries. Representative Saylor. Representative Saylor moves the House File 2290, and I believe that goes directly to the floor. Is that it?
Mr. Chair, it's to be included, possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
It goes where?
Is it possible to put it in the omnibus?
No.
Well, I guess it would go directly to the floor then.
Okay. Representative Saylor moves 2290 to pass for passage and referral to the General Register. And Representative Saylor, do you have any amendments or are these somebody else's?
Yes. Actually, I would like to move, there's a DE1. That's basically, it's the AO70544.
Oh. Not you. The AO70544, delete everything in the month. And that's to put it in the shape the author wants? Is correct. That correct?
And then I'll have an amendment onto that as well, but we might as well move that.
Okay, first we have to put that on. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, carries. No, carries. And then you want to amend that amendment? You get
correct.
One more amendment. Okay. Which amendment is that then?
That is also listed as the amendment to the AO70544
oh, okay.
Amendment.
Looks like this?
It looks like this.
Okay.
Yes, it does.
Representative Saylor moves the amendment to the AO70544 amendment to get it into the shape that the author wants. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. carries. Okay. Representative Saylor, go ahead.
Yes. This bill is just to remedy a problem that the railroad workers have with some of the medical records being accessed inadvertently by medical staff. And I will have the testifier, Mr. Carl Knudsen, explain the other ramifications of this bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Saylor. Mr. Knudsen?
Yes, my name is Carl Knudsen. I'm a retired legislative director for the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees, Railroad Track Workers, and I currently am associated with the a subdivision thereof, the Soo Line System Division of that same organization. First, I'd like to thank Britta Saylor, the Representative Saylor, for carrying this bill, and Representative Smith for his help on it. What's been handed out to you, I used to be a school teacher. The blue, so I use colors, the blue sheet that's been handed out is an explanation of the issue and our proposed remedy. The green is a copy of the excluded employments, and the yellow is a copy of the FELA, Federal Employees Liability Act. Railroad employees are not covered by workers' comp. We're covered by something called the Federal Employees Liability Act, which is a tort statute that was passed in 1908 to standardize tort complaints across the country against railroads. Before that, they had to have different rules in every state. Workers' comp didn't come into play until 1917 at the earliest. The issue is that under workers' comp, if the employer, if someone files for workers' comp, employer has automatic access to the person's medical records. The workers' comp system is so ingrained in the medical records community and the medical care community that they don't recognize anyone else. The railroad claims agents, who are the claims adjusters, take advantage of this. Oh, excuse me, I forgot. Under FELA, there is a tort liability statute. The employer has no access to your medical records without a signed consent or without your written consent. And the claims agents, and who are the people that settle the suits or claims against the railroad for injured workers, and some medical records care or medical staff, take advantage of the lack of knowledge of 176.041 that on the part of medical records providers, because they will state or imply that they're covered by workers' comp. For example, under workers' comp, you can be either have a insurance carrier or you can be self-insured. A claims agent will call a medical care provider and say, "I'm self-insured." And the person at the other end assumes that it's a workers' comp self-insurance. The railroad representative makes no effort to clarify that. The medical records provider releases the medical records to the railroader or railroad claims agent without the consent of the employee. And all then suddenly, when they've done that, they violate, I believe it's 166, the medical privacy statute in Minnesota, and they violated HIPAA, so they're subject to penalties. There is no penalty in law for what the railroad claim agent did at that moment in time. We have worked with the Department of Labor and Industry and on the language here, and that's why it's been falling together over a week. And we've worked to try to get it to the point where it's acceptable to everybody, on one side at least, and this language is. The issue is to try to level the playing field so that someone who deceives the medical care community has some penalty for them too. Right now there's no penalty, and with that I'll stand for questions.
Representative Coles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Saylor, or for the witness, the last sentence of the 544 amendment reads, "In addition, the injured party may bring a civil action in a court of competent jurisdiction." It a little unclear to me what that action would be for, because I believe that if I understand the way that FILA operates, and I have a very little bit of experience with it, the FILA claim, the injury claim, is subject exclusively to FILA. What injury are we talking about? Are we talking about the injury related to the disclosure of the information?
Yes, if there is one.
Mr. Knutson?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, Representative. That would be it, the injury related to the information. If that sentence makes you uncomfortable, we're willing to delete it.
Representative Calls?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'm not sure that I necessarily have a problem with what you're trying to get at. I'm just not sure that the sentence is entirely clear.
I think that Representative Calls probably is already in.
It's probably redundant, Mr. Chair. I suspect that there's already a cause of action if somebody takes your personal information and you suffer some loss, some compensable loss. I suspect you can already bring a cause of action. I think it's redundant, and I think it's also unclear. And so, Mr. Chair, in light of that, I'm going to move to delete that last sentence. And if Representative Saylor, if I'm wrong, or if you can, you know, help me work on some language here, then I'm happy to work to try to get something back in. I don't have a problem with what you're trying to do. I just think it's redundant, and I don't think it's terribly clear. So that would be my motion, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair and Representative Coles, that's as an amendment is certainly acceptable.
Representative Coles moves on line 1.10 of the 544 amendment. The amendment to the amendment. It's on line 1.10. The words "in addition" and the rest of the line would be deleted, and all of line 1.11 would be deleted. Does everybody understand that? My understanding is the author agrees to it. Any discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Carries.
And then, Mr. Chair, one last question. Just so I understand the bill here, and maybe this is for staff. We're indicating that if somebody does this, they're guilty of theft and can be prosecuted and sentenced pursuant to 60952. is that the statute that sets out the various levels? So if the damage is less than $500, it's a misdemeanor, gross misdemeanor, whatever it is. Is that what that statute says?
Ms. Perius?
Mr. Chair and Representative Coles, yes, you're correct. Under the theft statute, the misdemeanor provision would apply if the property or service is stolen is $250 or less.
Okay.
Representative Coles.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative Saylor or the witness, I understand that you've worked on this language with the departments. Have the railroads been a party to any of those discussions? Are they are they okay with where we're at?
Mr. Knutson?
Mr. Chair, Representative. The railroads are not, obviously, is a practice that they're hard-pressed to condone, but they have not approved the language. They're aware of the language. I've given it to them, and I'm not sure why they're not here.
Mr. Chair, I just note I haven't heard from the railroads, and I'm sure if they really were concerned about this, they would have contacted me or others. I don't know if others have heard from them, but Representative Saylor, with the amendment we've put on, I'm happy to support your bill going out of committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Coles. I would guess they don't want to show up and contest this kind of a bill. Okay, all in favor of Representative Saylor renews her motion for passage and referral to the General Register, as amended. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Carries. Thank you, Representative Saylor. The last bill is Representative Parks. Does somebody want to move 1609?
Mr. Chair, I'll move
Representative Bigham, you. Representative Bigham moves the 1609 bill. This one was laid over, and there are two amendments, and of course they're not engrossed because it hasn't gone out of our possession.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A6 amendment for Representative Clark.
I just wanted to explain first. The A3 and the A5 amendment were already adopted by this committee. So now Representative Bigham moves the A6 amendment, which I believe is requested by the League of Cities. Is that Representative
right.
Clark?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. Do you all have it? Do you have the A6?
I do.
Yes.
Everybody have it? Okay.
I think
just
so.
Let me make sure.
Representative Clark, do you or your witness want to explain the...
Yeah, let me just say a couple things about the bill. I guess you've heard the bill, so you know
yes.
a lot about... Okay, well then let me just say this amendment is brought to us by the League of Cities, and I'll just ask for some explanation of that. I'm fine with the amendment. Are you having a hard time hearing?
Yes.
Okay, this amendment is brought to us by the League of Cities, and I will ask...
Mr. Chair, my name is Patricia Beattie, and I am with the League of Minnesota Cities. I'm an attorney that practices in the employment area for the League, and I'm here with Jenna O'Rourke from the League of Minnesota Cities. Very briefly, this amendment simply clarifies the intended scope, I think, of the whistleblower statute, and that is to make sure that the protections that we're giving, and there's going to be added protections with Representative Clark's bill, that are truly intended to protect whistleblowers, those acting on behalf of those in the public interest, not simply out of some sort of self-interest. And that is the language, then, that we are adding, is to clarify that the whistleblowing itself needs to involve a matter of public concern, and we have added language that helps define that, and the courts have defined matters of public concern as to something that affects public interest. So we are not limiting, I think, we are clarifying the scope of whistleblowing activities.
So with that, you're satisfied then for the League of Cities?
Yes, we are satisfied, and we have a few additional comments that the author agreed to discuss with us later, but in general we would be satisfied.
Okay, so the first thing is to put, and Representative Clark, you want this A6 amendment to put it in the shape you want, correct?
I do, Mr. Chairman. That will be the bill
okay.
that I can be happy about.
All in favor of the A6 amendment to put it in the shape the author wants, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Carries. Okay, the bill is before us with the original draft plus the two amendments that were adopted plus the A6, which we have just put on it. Is there any discussion of the bill? Okay, then Representative Bigham renews her motion and this goes to finance. Does this go to the... This one goes to finance, that's what I thought. Representative Bigham renews her motion for passage and referral to the Finance Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members.
Thank you, Representative Clark. Representative Cole. Sorry.
Mr. Chair, a little bit of information. I think that's probably what you're going to do about what's next. Are we done? Or
I was just going to go into that. Representative Coles, around here, as you know, nobody knows what the future predicts. To the best of my knowledge, we won't have any further meetings, but. You never know what's going on here. We could have more meetings. Just never know what's going on. And so I think this will be our last meeting. We obviously don't need to come back this afternoon. There's nothing new. And so I want to thank, first of all, our great staff has done a great job of, you know, staffing the most probably the heaviest workload committee for a number of bills and things like that, and keeping up with the rest of us has been really difficult, probably for them. And I want to thank all the members for working so well together and getting, I think, good bills through this year. And so, Representative Cole.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to echo those comments and also on behalf of the members here on my side of the aisle, especially thank the staff. Vicki Roll Call Benson has been awesome. Mr. Baldwin, I'm glad we finally got you a nameplate and to help research. And both Mr. Bearden and Kate, I'm sorry, I don't know your last name, but DFL Research, I appreciate everybody's efforts. And Mr. Chair, a special thank you to you.
we absolutely had a couple, a little bit of a rocky start and a couple rocky meetings, but we worked our way through those, and I think you're absolutely right. At the end of the day, we were able to move some good legislation through this committee. The workload has been heavy, and we certainly as members couldn't have done it without the assistance of staff. So I appreciate your willingness to let us discuss the issues and offer amendments, and appreciate the way that the committee was able to get through some of those tough issues and work together. I think the crime bill is a good success, and we moved a lot of other good legislation through here. So I appreciate your efforts, Mr. Chair, and a heartfelt thank you to staff as well. And Mr. Chair, to the pages. We shouldn't forget the pages, because they run around when Mr. Baldwin and Ms. Benson don't have an amendment that's supposed to be here. They're the ones who have to run off and get the copies and get it around. So much appreciation to the pages as well. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, everyone. And I guess with that, the gavel's already taken. So.
What?